You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the blind and print disabled. Welcome to today's recording of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 6th. I'm Serena Thede from Drake University, and here is your first story. Bringing World to Rural Iowa. The Grange Public House and Brewery has struggled to find good workers since Iowa's Western's closure. The picture of this story is the outside storefront of the Grange with all of its twinkly lights and some snow, probably taken from a few weeks back when there was still snow on the ground. Private colleges and universities. When Iowa Western University announced its closure in March 2023, students working at the Grange Public House and Brewery could be seen checking their phones and crying on shift. Owner Sue Sorensen said they would wipe their tears and go back to serving customers, all while feeling like the world was ending. About a year later, the restaurant, as well as the Mount Pleasant community, are moving forward without the institution that brought people, growth, and culture to town. In Pella, another college town, resident Robert Judkins said he gets sad sometimes when driving past Central College in the summer. The campus sits empty of students and the extra liveliness they bring to the community. I just love the activity, Judkins said. I love the fact that I have to stop my car and let a bunch of kids cross the street. I like the fact that when I drive through town on a Saturday, you can hear the noise from the crowd at the football game, the buzz, the activity there. Iowa's private colleges and universities have an outsized impact in the community that houses them, from economic growth to cultural experiences, bringing benefits to both sides of the coin, advocates say. As rising costs, fewer income students, and other uncertainties make it more difficult to thrive, these historical institutions are thinking of new ways to secure their futures in their homes. Colleges help community economies thrive. According to the Iowa College Foundations, Iowa's private colleges and universities contribute more than $1.8 billion in annual economic impact across the state and employ more than 10,000 people. For colleges based in small towns and rural areas, they are among the largest employers with good pay and benefits, said Gary Stinke, president of Iowa Association of Independent Colleges and Universities. Add in the hundreds to thousands of students coming to study, live, and maybe work in the area, and foot traffic is greatly increased in small towns to colleges. Students also rely on local businesses for shopping, eating, errands, like getting their haircuts, and more, Steinke said, bumping the local economy up. Graceland University president Patricia Draves said, Lamani would probably not have a Hy-Vee if college wasn't in town. The community actually becomes intertwined with the institution, and the economic impact of that is just unbelievable, Steinke said. Beyond the direct impacts the people who make up private institutions have on local businesses, Steinke said the act of maintaining and expanding a college campus contributes to Iowa's economy. Renovations and construction projects at private universities, while often funded by alum and others who don't live in the area, are undertaken and finished by Iowa workers, Steinke said, putting more money in Iowans' pockets and into the economy. Iowa companies poured concrete. Iowa welders welded the steel beams. Iowa companies did the roofing. Iowa people did the landscaping, Steinke said. It goes down the line, and that's just one building. Colleges can even help modernize the towns themselves. At Graceland University, Drave said that the work computer science facility did in the 1990s to earn grants for better wiring made it so the area has broadband internet today. This has contributed to businesses being able to thrive in the internet era. Students are also heavily involved in volunteering in the community, Drave said, helping with organizations like social service programs and the food pantry in order to gain experience and give back. We definitely think if the colleges were not here, I worry about whether the town would be sustainable, Drave said. Bringing the world to small town Iowa. A fine art gallery in Lamani, a hockey arena in Sioux Center, nationally recognized choirs in Waverly and Decorah. Beyond dollars and business growth, private universities expand the opportunities communities have to experience art, entertainment, and culture. Cultural impacts of private universities cannot be quantified, Sankey said. Grayson University hosts some of the art-related activities every week, Drave said. Whether it's a student recital, one-act play, or performance from visitors to the college. The university also puts on more major art events around once or twice a month, like a concert or a major play. Sports also garner a lot of local support, Drive said. Community members will often use these as social get-togethers, pairing attending an event with grabbing lunch or other activities. As a leader in higher education, Drave said she feels a responsibility to offer educational opportunities to the community as well as entertainment. Lecture series, student presentations, and guest talks all serve the community as well as campus, introducing people to new information and ways of thinking. There's a whole world that we get to open up to those people. And then people choose to retire here because of that, Drave said. I mean, I can give you a huge list of people that chose just to retire here because of the opportunities they get at Graceland. For many students, coming to Lamoni through Graceland University opens doors to a whole new world as well. A little less than half of Graceland's student population come from the Midwest, Drave said, and the majority of the rest come from more than 500 miles away. Many Graceland students from Florida, Texas, California, and across the globe are experiencing small-town Iowa living for the first time, Drave said, and once the culture shock wears off, they begin to fall in love with it. There is something comforting about being in a small community, Drave said. For our kids from Miami, they're like, it feels like heaven to me here. Mount Pleasant moving ahead after closure. Once the news was announced that Iowa Western was going to close, Sorensen said her restaurant had to switch up schedule to accommodate students going on college visits and moving out of their temporary living at Iowa Western or in Mount Pleasant, and the restaurant ended up losing 8 employees. Those losses were paired with uncertainties of how business levels would be impacted, and they created the situation of employees having to work doubles so the restaurant could keep its hours. It's not like we look around and go, okay, there are Iowa Western people. I mean, they were just Mount Pleasant people. We couldn't distinguish one from another, Sorensen said. So it was hard, and we didn't know what the future was going to look like. Rachel Linden, executive vice president of the Mount Pleasant Area Chamber Alliance, said that the community won't know the total impact of the closure until 1 year anniversary. But overall, the community's economy is still thriving. The most immediate impact of Iowa Western's closing was on the local workforce, Linden said. Students who worked at restaurants, retail shops, and more suddenly had to leave those slots empty. And the employee pool wasn't large enough to fill it. The Grange is still operating with a slightly smaller staff, Jordan said, and it's been difficult to find good workers who will stick around. We'll never get the caliber that we had before, Soren said. And when I say that, I don't mean that they were just really, really good, but some of the employees that we had fraud from the university really kind of had that work ethic, the ideals of what the future was going to look like, and they knew how to work. While the restaurant did see a dip in business, Soren said it was less drastic than their worst expectation. Some of the cultural offerings Iowa Western brought to the town, however, are being missed. Linden said sports activities were popular entertainment in Mount Pleasant, as well as lecture series and other events hosted by the college. Even so, some of the cultural institutions housed by the university are continuing. The Southeast Iowa Symphony Orchestra, which is based at Iowa Western, continues to hold performances for the community, and the Harlan Lincoln House, a historic house built by Senator James Harlan and frequently by his and Abraham Lincoln's descendants, has established its own nonprofit organization to continue keeping the house open for tours and events after the college closed. People are stepping up and starting to fill those voids, Linden said. Community members are also working to fill roles that students left behind at art fairs and other activities. Swanson said people were worried ahead of Midwest Old Threshers events that there wouldn't be enough volunteers to staff them, as students would usually help out. The baseball team would even stay up overnight to watch out craft booths so no one would mess them up. People from Southeastern Community College and Burlington joined in the festivities to fill the gaps, Sorensen said, letting events go on as planned. Everybody kind of took it upon themselves to be available, Sorensen said. As for Iowa Western's campus, Linden said, all but one of the buildings have been sold or repurposed for the future. The Mount Pleasant Community School District has purchased much of the central campus, and housing and other properties have been bought up, with the only building remaining to go or to be torn down being the old gym. Having grown up close to the campus and taken jobs there when she was younger, Linden said, there's a nostalgic sadness in seeing the college divided up and sold. Even so, looking at the still well-maintained property and being able to see a bright future ahead for both the campus and the community makes it a lot easier to handle. It is sad, but knowing that I know now that the campus does, as a whole, have a path forward is just encouraging and reassuring, Linden said. Private colleges strategize to thrive. With problems facing higher education institutions today, from rising costs to shrinking enrollment numbers, private colleges are looking for ways to keep thriving in their small towns. In 2018, Rave said she took the Graceland University Board of Trustees that the business model that they had at the time would not be sustainable long term. At the end, the university was making cuts in order to tighten its belt, she said. But at some point, there would have been nothing else to cut. From there, the university begins turning its efforts to investing in programs that would yield more students and funds in the long run, including an accelerated hybrid Doctor of Physical Therapy program, which launched this semester. This would allow students to conduct their studies online part-time, traveling to the college's Missouri campus when needed. The college is working with a planned budget deficit in order to invest in their program, with allocation for more than $3 million planned over the next 3 to 5 years. As the program is now enrolling students and bringing in tuition dollars, Drave said, they would be able to make up that gap. Graceland University is also working to get its foot in the door with families who may balk at costs by reducing its base tuition in half and simplifying the financial aid formula. Drave said the goal behind the changes is to show students what they'll be paying up front rather than showing them a large number that would later be brought down by scholarships and other financial aid. We just think it's more translucent. We just think it's way more transparent to say this is closer to what you pay. And then you can have that conversation, Drave said. The university has also tried to smooth admissions paths in order to attract more international and transfer students. Central College is pitching new projects and strengthening its partnership with Pella with the Imagine More at Central to Pella initiative. This 5-year plan involves constructing new housing near campus, with units available for both students and townspeople, collaborating with local restaurants and businesses to bring students into the community and the community onto campus, and increasing philanthropy efforts. Central College President Mark Putnam said its initiative was born from looking at the path to the past for inspiration when planning for the future. He and other Central are striving to make the college stand out from other schools, and they're hoping that crafting a college experience that can take students off campus will do just that. The future of Central College is heavily tied to Pella's future, which looks in every way I can see very bright, Putnam said. There's no one situation that would work for every university facing challenges today, Putnam said. It may seem like private colleges are all similar enough. Each storied institutions, as he called them, have their own context to work with in terms of their history, programs, and location. While Central College has definitely felt the sting of inflation, making the college have to think harder about where budget dollars are going and how they're being used, it's nothing compared to peers he's spoken to in areas like New York. It is harder for private universities to thrive today than it was in the past, Steinke said. But with the support from their boards, leaders, and committees they call home, Iowan's institutions are still able to welcome students from across the globe. It is more difficult than it used to be, no doubt about that. But you've got to remember, over the history of private colleges, most of these private colleges have been around for over 100 years, Steinke said. There have been depressions, there have been world wars, there have been all kinds of problems in those 100 years, and they're still there, and they will continue to be there. For our next story, we are going to be taking a dive into Iowa Game Master sues over a role-playing game, and this in particular is Realms of Kimura. A role-playing game called Realms of Kimura, developed by an Iowa man, is now the focus of a legal battle in federal court. A certified therapeutic game master from Iowa is suing a Texas company called Geek Therapeutics for libel, slander, and copyright infringement over a banned Dungeons & Dragons spinoff. Sean Thomas and his Ankeny company, Tabletop Adventure, are suing Geek Therapeutic and its founder, Dr. Anthony Bean, a licensed psychologist in U.S. District Court for Southern District of Iowa. The lawsuit revolves around Thomas's development of a role-playing tabletop game called Realms of Kimura. The lawsuit claims that players of the game inhabit a fictional world that provides an inclusive and welcoming environment for all types of individuals. Thomas alleges that in creating Realms of Kimura, he produced a graphical map, stories in the form of written prose, and graphic depictions of various characters within those stories. In 2021, he created a limited liability company, Tabletop Adventure, to hold the copyrights, trademarks, and other rights associated with the game. That same year, the lawsuit alleges Thomas acquired his Therapeutic Game Master certification from Geek Therapeutics, signaling his ability to host role-playing games in therapeutic environments. Soon thereafter, Thomas and Bean allegedly began discussing a potential licensing agreement whereby Geek Therapeutics would manufacture, market, and distribute Realms of Kimura. The lawsuit alleges Thomas was concerned about losing control of intellectual property rights associated with the game, and that Bean agreed all such rights would remain with Thomas. Negotiation continued through December of 2022 when it was learned Wizards of the Coast was planning major changes in its licensing agreement that allowed third parties to create games using rules that were compatible with the popular Dungeons & Dragons role-playing game system. Among the planned changes was one that would grant to Wizards of the Coast a perpetual royalty-free license to use the official licensed third-party game for any purpose. The lawsuit claims that this plan triggered an uproar in the tabletop gaming community because many game developers had created business models centered around the compatibility with Dungeons & Dragons rules. Thomas was among the concerned developers because he had intended to make Realms of Kimura compatible with Dungeons & Dragons, but was opposed to the Wizards of the Coast licensing arrangement, according to the lawsuit. Geek Therapeutic, however, opted to pursue compatibility, and it moved forward with its marketing plan of Realms of Kimura. Despite the alleged lack of finalized licensing agreement between Thomas and the Texas company, Geek Therapeutic launched a Kickstarter crowd-funded campaign to get Realms of Kimura to market. In April of 2023, Thomas allegedly demanded that Geek Therapeutic immediately cease all efforts to produce and distribute his game. According to the lawsuit, Geek Therapeutic announced plans last month to distribute and sell the game through its Kickstarter campaign. Hundreds of people have pre-registered to provide support for this game. The lawsuit claims and various websites and merchandise have been created to promote and sell the game. In addition to an injunction, Thomas's lawsuit seeks damage for a copyright infringement as well as libel and slander, with Thomas alleging the defendant sent its Kickstarter backers a supportive email that falsely claimed to be from him. And with that stranger, but also kind of cool relevant story, we'll go to our next one. This story will be about Liberty University being fined $14 million, authorities report. The Christian school failed to issue information about campus crimes, and there is no picture connected to this story. Liberty University agreed to pay an unprecedented $14 million for the fine for the Christian school's failure to disclose information about crimes on its campus and for its treatment of sexual assault survivors, the U.S. Department of Education announced Tuesday. The fine is by far the largest ever levied under the Clery Act, a law that requires colleges and universities that receive federal funding to collect data on campus crimes and notify students of threats. Schools have decimated an annual security report that includes crime reports and information on efforts to improve campus safety. Liberty has marked itself for years on having one of the nation's safest campuses, with more than 15,000 students enrolled at the school in Lynchburg, Virginia. The U.S. Department of Education said it's identified cases that resulted in misclassification or underreporting of crimes. There were several incidents that the university determined to be unfounded without evidence, and the initial report was false. This is especially common with respect to sexually based offenses, including rape and fondling cases, the final program review stated. In other news this morning, Gaza ceasefire talks fail. Upcoming holy month of Ramadan could see an uptake in violence. And there is no picture connected to this story. The Middle East, Cairo. 3 days of negotiation with Hamas over ceasefire in Gaza and the release of Israeli hostages failed to achieve a breakthrough on Tuesday, Egyptian officials said. Less than a week before the start of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, the informational deadline for a deal. The nearly 5 months of fighting left much of Gaza in ruins and created a worsening humanitarian catastrophe, with many, especially in the devastating northern region, scrambling for food to survive. Aid groups say that it has become nearly impossible to deliver supplies within most of Gaza because of the difficulty of coordinating with the Israeli military, the ongoing hostilities, and breakdown of public order. The United States, Qatar, and Egypt spent weeks trying to broker an agreement in which Hamas would release up to 40 hostages in return for a 6-week ceasefire. The release of some Palestinian prisoners and a major influx of aid to the isolated territory. Two Egyptian officials say that the latest round of discussion ended Tuesday. They said militant group Hamas presented a proposal that mediators would discuss with Israel in the coming days. One of the officials said, they said militant group Hamas presented a proposal that mediators would discuss with Israel in the coming days. One of the officials said mediators would meet Wednesday with the Hamas delegation, which did not leave Cairo. Senior Hamas official Asmala Hamdan said Tuesday that his group demands a permanent ceasefire rather than a 6-week pause and a complete withdrawal of Israeli forces. The security and safety of our people will be achieved only by a permanent ceasefire, the end of aggression, and the withdrawal from every inch of the Gaza Strip, Hamdan told reporters in Beirut. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has publicly rejected Hamas demands and repeatedly vowed to continue the war until Hamas is dismantled and all the hostages are returned. Israel didn't send a delegation to the latest round of talk. Israel was still waiting for Hamas to hand over a list of hostages who are alive as well as hostages to prisoner ratio and seeks in any release deal, an Israeli officer said. The Israeli and Egyptian spoke on conditions of anatomy. Mediators hoped to broker an agreement before Ramadan, the month of dawn to dusk fasting that often sees heightening Israeli-Palestinian tensions linked to access to a major holy site in Jerusalem. Ramadan is expected to begin about March 10th, depending on the sighting of the moon. You are listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 6th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, in Des Moines. I'm Serena Thede from Drake University. IRIS volunteers would love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 515-243-6833. And now, back into the news. In today's paper, there are no obituaries, so we will be moving on to the sports, lifestyle, and other section of today's news. In sports today, we have the Boilermakers rally past Uni to clinch Big Ten title. Purdue's Zach Aid celebrated the team's 77-71 win over Illinois as Coleman Hawkins walked off the court Tuesday in Champaign, Illinois. And the picture is, in fact, Zach right there on the court, hands in the air celebrating. In Champaign, Illinois, Zach Adid has 28 points and 8 rebounds as number 3 Purdue rallied in the second half to beat number 12 Illinois 77-71 on Tuesday night, becoming the first team in 17 years to win consecutive outright Big Ten regular season championships. Fletcher Lawyer added 16 points for the Boilermakers, 27-3, who had already clinched at least a share of their record straight conference title on Saturday night's game. With Saturday night's victory over Michigan State, the previous Big Ten team to win back-to-back outright regular season crowns was Ohio State in 2006 and 2007. Braden Smith had 13 points and 6 assists for Purdue, which improved to 7-0 against ranking opponents this season. Mason Gillis scored 10 off the bench. Lawyer had a 3-pointer with 3 minutes and 8 seconds left that put Purdue ahead for good, 67-66. Marcus Damask led second place Illinois 28-8 for the overall season, 13-6 in the conference, with 20 points. Coleman Hawkins had 13 points and 9 rebounds for the game. Quincy Guerrier scored 12 for the Fighting Illinois, and Terrence Shannon Jr. had 11 points on 3-for-13 shooting, including 0 of 4 from 3-point range. Number 7, North Carolina, beat Notre Dame 84-51. Armando Bascot received a senior night standing ovation in his ACC record 162nd conference game, and the Tar Heels, who are 24-6 for the season and 13-3 in their division in conference play, overpowered the Irish, who are 12-18 for the season and 7-12 in their conference. Scoring his last basket at Smith Center on a 3-pointer, Bascot finished the game with 13 points and 5 rebounds. RJ Davis added 22 points for UNC. Number 13, Auburn beat Missouri 101-74, with Jalen Williams scoring 17 points to lead 6 players in double figures as the Auburn Tigers, who are 23-7 for the season and 12-5 in the SEC conference, to beat the last place Missouri Tigers, who are 8-22 for the year and 0-17 for the conference. Joni Broom had 15 points and 8 rebounds for Auburn, which led nearly the entire way. Sean East II led Missouri with 21 points. Next up, we had number 14, Kansas, beat Kansas State in a statewide rivalry 90-68. Kevin McCuller Jr. had 19 points. Hunter Dickinson added 15 points and 20 rebounds. And the Jayhawks, who were 22-8 for the season and 10-7 in the Big 12, snapped a 2-game skid with a blowout of the Wildcats, who are 17-13 this season with a 7-10 conference standing. Florida beat number 16, University of Alabama, 105-87. Will Richards scored 23 points. Walter Clayton Jr. added 22. And the Gators, who are 21-9 for the season and 11-6 in the SEC, handled the visiting Crimson Tide, who is 20-10 for the season with a 12-5 conference record, to stay in contention for the top 4 seed in the upcoming conference tournament. And that is it for the sports recaps. In other news today with sports, the Jaguars cut defenders William and Jenkins. Allen gets franchise tag, and this is in NFL notes. The Jacksonville Jaguars cut their starting secondary Tuesday to create $16.6 million in salary cap space. The Jaguars released veteran cornerback Darius Williams and safety Rashawn Jenkins minutes apart and hours before they were expected to use their finance tag on pass rusher Josh Allen. Williams, who started 30 games over the past two seasons in Jacksonville, was due to make $9 million in 2024 and count $12 million against the cap. The Jaguars will take on $500,000 in dead money while saving $11.5 million this season. Jenkins, who has started 50 games over the past three seasons in Jacksonville, was due to make $8 million in 2024 and count $12.3 million against the cap, and the Jaguars would take a $7.14 million in dead money while saving $5.15 million this season for that trade. Allen gets tagged. The Jaguars used their franchise tag on standout pass rusher Josh Allen on Tuesday, essentially guaranteeing he will play at least another year in Jacksonville. Allen, the seventh overall pick in the 2019 draft, set a single-season franchise record with 17.5 sacks in the final year of his rookie contract and is 10 shy of the team's career mark, 55, held by Tony Brankins from 1996 to 2003 when he played. In other news from the NFL notes, Seahawks to release Adam Diggs and Disley. Renton, Washington. The Seattle Seahawks remodel under new coach Mike McDonald starting Tuesday as the team released safeties Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and tight end Will Disley in moves that will give the team a boost of salary cap space ahead of the start of the new league year. The release of Diggs and Disley will save Seattle $18 million against the cap. They will get about $6 million in cap relief with the release of Adams, but also take on nearly $20 million in dead money cap by releasing him immediately and not waiting until after June 1st. Some brief news in the sports world under the NFL. Still, the Colts, Indianapolis, place the non-exclusive franchise tag on starter receiver Michelle Pittman Jr. on Tuesday. The two sides have been discussing a contract extension since the end of last season. The Buccaneers, Tampa Bay, placed a franchise tag on Antoine Winfield Jr., ensuring the All-Pro safety a one-year $17.1 million salary for the next season. The Baltimore Ravens put the franchise tag on Justin Madubuike on Tuesday, after the defensive tackle finished his rookie contract with a breakout season in 2023. The Panthers, Carolina, placed the non-exclusive franchise tag on two-time Super Bowl outside lineman Brian Burns. The Chicago Bears placed a franchise tag on quarterback Jalen Johnson on Tuesday after he made his first Pro Bowl in the final season of his rookie contract. And with that, I will stop NFL notes. Now we will get into the now playing reviews of movies showing in theaters or streaming online right now as a general knowledge. Right now, the cover picture for this is Juan Torres star in Problemista. Right now playing is Drive Away Dolls. It's fascinating that Ethan Coen and Trisha Cook, longtime filmmakers, collaborated and spouse, have reportedly described their new film as trashy. Perhaps it's a way to get away from certain expectations tied to Coen and his former filmmaking partner, his brother Joel. Drive Away Dolls asserts a space that one can call a country with young lesbian, if one were so inclined. The film itself is a queering of the 90s crime capper that the Coen brothers and their contemporary. As we look into the later days this week and the weekend, the weather for today will be around 61 degrees is the high, with mild sun and some wind and some clouds tonight. Thursday, tomorrow, March 7th, will be cooler with occasional rain, with a high of 55 and a low of 35, with some eastern winds of 8 to 16 miles per hour. Friday will be a little morning rain and some wind, with a high of 45 and a low of 26. And then as we jump into Saturday, it will be plenty of sunshine, with minimal wind and a 51 degree high and 26 low. And then Sunday, to cap off the weekend, it'll be a 61 degree high and a 39 degree low, with, of course, sun and breeze in the later afternoon. For nutrition today, food choices for a happy, healthy heart. And a picture of Barbara Intermill. It's only about the size of your fist, yet it pumps around 2,000 gallons of blood throughout your body every day. If you could stretch out the complex network of blood vessels in your body through which your heart pumps oxygen and nutrients, it would extend over 60,000 miles. Pretty amazing, these hearts of ours, and pretty sad when they get sick. In fact, according to the Center of Diseases Control and Prevention, heart disease is the leading cause of death and disease for both men and women in the U.S. As of 2021 statistics, one in every five deaths each year was due to heart disease. Yet, there's another amazing fact. An estimated 80% of heart attacks and strokes could have been prevented, according to the World Health Organization. How to do that is nothing we haven't heard before. Eat a healthy, full diet. Get regular physical activity, at least 30 minutes a day. Don't use tobacco. The risk of heart attacks or stroke begins to drop immediately after you stop using tobacco, says the WHO. So, what is a healthful diet? One proven to lower blood pressure and keep blood cholesterol in normal range, says the American Heart Association. And such diet as the DASH, Dietary Approach to Stop Hypertension Eating Plan. Spoiler alert, if you detest fruits and vegetables, get over it. Among other benefits, these foods are vital to blood pressure control. Most adults should aim for 4 to 5 servings, about 2 to 3 cups of vegetables every day. Ditto for fruit. Dairy foods, 2 or 3 daily servings of low-fat milk, cheese, and yogurt are also part of the DASH plan, based on finding what the synergy between those and other foods is favorable for heart health. Eat nuts, seeds, legumes 4 to 5 times a week. These provide heart-healthy fat and cholesterol-lowering dietary fiber. DASH guidelines also recommend 1 or 2 fish meals a week, along with a variety of other protein foods such as poultry, eggs, and lean meat. Emphasize on lean. Modest 3-ounce servings of lean meat are low in calories and saturated fats while providing protein, the heart is a muscle, remember, and other essential nutrients. And lest you think there limits your choice, there are at least 29 cuts of meat that meet the U.S. Department of Agricultural definition for lean, including sirloin, round, tenderloin, and even tri-tip. Healthy heart also thrives on a fair share, 6 to 8 servings a day, of grain, whole grain when possible. Choose a variety of cereals, rice, pasta, bread for the most benefit. Fats focus on vegetable-based oils and dressings in small amount, 1 to 2 tablespoons a day. Even occasional sweets, no more than 5 servings a week, can fit into a heart-healthy eating plan according to DASH recommendations. Caution though, a serving is just 1 tablespoon of jam, jelly, or sugar. Lastly, limit alcohol, as it can increase blood pressure when consumed in excess. Best to go by your doc's recommendations on this one. Barbara Intermill is also a registered dietitian, and if you have any further questions on this paper, please email her at Barbara, B-A-R-B-A-R-A, at quinessentialnutrition.com. In celebrity news and entertainment briefs, Carol G addresses mid-air emergency at her concert, and the picture attached to this story is simply a picture of Carol G. Carol G fiercely vowed not to give up in an emotional interaction at her concert after her plane had a mid-air emergency due to malfunctioning generators. The 33-year-old Colombian singer's private jet was forced to make an emergency landing as smoke filled the cockpit. The star and her team were on board her Gulfstream G400 when it took off from Burbank's airport in California on Thursday, but the plane turned around shortly after being airborne and made an unscheduled landing at Van Nuys Airport, around 15 miles west of Burbank. Addressing the scary incident, she told the crowd at her Guatemala concert, as translated by Pop Crave, that, "I don't know what happened energetically, but whatever it is, I'm not going to give up, and you came to see my show." Carol G is currently in the middle of a tour of Latin America and performed two shows in Guatemala on Friday and Saturday. And next off, Rai's career crumbled before awards triumph. And it is a picture of Rai, which is spelled R-A-Y-E, and she is a female singer. Rai felt her career was crumbling just 18 months before her triumph at the Brit Awards. The 26-year-old singer made history at the ceremony in London on Saturday night when she became the first artist ever to win 6 awards in a single night. But she worried her musical dream was slipping away less than 2 years ago, when she had to beg her agent not to drop her. She told the Times newspaper, "I'm just happy to be here. 18 months ago, my career had gone." 3 years ago, Rai parted ways with her record label, Polydor Records, after accusing them of refusing to release her album, and she won a re-release for her career as an independent artist. The move proved to be the right one, as she was nominated for a record-breaking 7 awards at the 2024 Brit Awards and managed to scoop the Covenant Album of the Year prize for My 20th Century Blues. On this day in history, on March 6th, 1857, the U.S. Supreme Court in Dred Scott v. Sanford ruled 7-2 that Scott, a slave, was not an American citizen and therefore could not sue for his freedom in federal court. On this date in 1834, the city of York in Upper Canada was incorporated into Toronto, which is kind of cool. In 1912, Oreo sandwich cookies were first introduced on this day by the National Biscuit Company. So, happy birthday, Oreos. We also have, in 1973, Nobel Prize winner author Pearl S. Buck died in Danbury, Vermont. In 2016, the former First Lady Nancy Reagan died in Los Angeles at age 94 on this day. In 1944, the U.S. heavily bombed the stage a full-scale raid in Berlin during World War II. And that is a little bit about today in history. If you're into astrology, we are about to approach the time of the Aries, which is March 21st to April 19th. And today, for your birthday, if it is your birthday out there, happy birthday. For March 6th, 2024, today's birthday stands for Communicates, Shares, and Expresses to Grow this year. Realize personal dreams with organization, discipline, and coordination. Summer collaboration gets delucrative, cushioning springtime personal cash shortfalls. When a coveted prize this autumn before sharing financial puzzles requires winter solutions, write, sketch, and illustrate your ideas. After the Aries season, we're going to be moving into Taurus, which is from April 20th to May 20th. In some other sports news for this week, the Panthers beat the Devils 5-13 in the National Hockey League. The Islanders beat the Blues 4-2. The Penguins beat the Blue Jackets 5-3. The Canadiens beat the Predators 4-3 in overtime. The Krakens beat the Jets 4-3. The Blackhawks beat the Coyotes 5-2. The Canucks beat the Kings 2-1 in overtime. The Stars beat the Sharks 7-6 in overtime. In a special showcase on Leon Draisaitl, scoring 2 minutes and 18 seconds into overtime for his second goal of the game. And the Edmonton Oilers beat the Boston Bruins 2-1 on Tuesday with their 5th consecutive victory. Some other sports news for the day and our stats of the day here in the news section. With 2 goals and 2 assists for the Colorado Avalanche on Monday, Nathan Kinnunen extends his home point streak to 30 games. It's the second longest to start the season in National Hockey League history, trailing only Wayne Gretzky's 40-game run in 1988-1989. In NBA news this week, the Magic beat the Hornets 101-89. The Pacers beat the Mavericks 137-120. The Hawks beat the Knicks 116-100. Rockets beat the Spurs 114-101. The Suns beat the Nuggets 117-107 in overtime. The Nets beat the 76ers 112-107. The Heat beat the Pelicans 118-110. And the Pelicans beat the Raptors 139-98. And I apologize for that one. It was the Heat Pistons game that was 118-110. And today's NBA stat of the day is, despite a 32-point performance from Jaden Poole on Monday, Washington dropped its 15th straight game. The Wizards are only one loss away from tying the franchise's longest skid, set in March of 2010. Looking ahead into March Madness starting in the coming weeks, Iowa has their very own Iowa State Cyclones in sixth place overall in national rankings with a 23-6 record and 112 points for the season. This will come with very big perks for the Cyclones as they look into the March Madness tournament in the next coming weeks. My next story will be from yesterday, March 5th's edition of the Daily Nonpareil, and the story I'll be touching on is the Bluffs Country launches. Pause for pause. From the Midlands Humane Society, and it is a picture of a adorable little dog named Jonathan. Looks possibly like a golden retriever, but also could be a white lab. Midlands Humane Society and Bluffs Country 106.5 are excited to roll out a brand new weekly morning show segment called Pause for Pause. While Bluffs Country has invited MHS to the station multiple times to let people know what's happening at the shelter, this new opportunity will provide a chance to showcase an adoptable animal each week. Midlands Humane Society is the first and only nonprofit humane society in Council Bluffs and serves both the city of Council Bluffs and Pottawatomie County, with approximately 3,000 animals coming through the doors of the shelter each year. Getting the word out about the animals looking for a forever home is a big deal. While MHS has successfully utilized social media, news outlets, and newspaper ads, creating this partnership with Bluffs County is an exciting way to target potential adopters and people who resonate with the MHS mission. Bluffs Country is the first commercial station based in Council Bluffs since 1985, when Sweet 98 moved to Omaha. The station's format is 90s and 2000s country. After hosting a fundraiser for Midlands Humane Society by collecting items for the animals in need, the host of Bluffs Country Morning Show, Peggy Sweet, knew that it was possible to make an even bigger impact on the homeless animals in their community. Thus, Pause for Pause was born. Thank you to Boomagur for sponsoring this segment each Friday morning. You can tune into this weekly segment each Friday at 8:20 a.m. to learn more about the adoptable dogs, cats, and small critters at MHS, volunteering opportunities, and even upcoming events such as the MHS Gala. In addition to this weekly column in the Nonpareil, the radio segment is a great way to learn more about your local nonprofit humane society and maybe even lead to your next furry BFF. Tickets for the MHS annual gala are on sale now. You don't want to miss out on the most possum fundraiser of the year that benefits the thousands of homeless animals that come into MHS every year. Get your tickets at midlandhumanesociety.org/adopt. This week's MHS Pet of the Week is Aria, and she is a 2-year-old spayed female lab mix who will be a great companion for most any family. She successfully lived with dogs, cats, and kids in her previous home. She may take a moment to warm up to you, but once she does, she is ready to give you all the hugs and kisses. Mocha is a 2-year-old spayed female pit bull who spent the past 8 weeks at the Claridina Correction Canine Training Program. This sweet, well-mannered girl came to the MHS underweight and still caring for a few puppies. After spending lots of one-on-one time with her handler, she is looking much better and is ready to continue her training with her adopter. We think she'll be a great addition to most any home where she is not a breed ban, where there is not a breed ban in place. Checkers is a 1-year-old neutered male husky mix who came to MHS extremely skinny, dirty, and very quiet. However, all they wanted from the staff taking care of him was affection. The adopter will need to work with their veterinarian to get Checkers to a maintainable and healthy weight. He will be an excellent, loyal companion. Jonathan is a 1.5-year-old lab poodle mix that is a happy-go-lucky dude that is ready to become your BFF. He is full of energy and will be a great addition to any active home ready to bring him along on all the adventures. Jonathan is a very sweet, affectionate dog and will be a great companion for any home willing to continue basic obedience training. The MHS will be at PetSmart in Council Bluff from noon to 3 on Sunday, March 17th, and Wednesday, March 20th, with adoptable pets. Don't forget to tune into Bluff's Country on Friday at 8:20 a.m. MHS is open weekdays from noon to 6 and Saturdays 5 a.m. to 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Check out our available pets online by visiting our website at midlandhumanesociety.org/adopt. And wasn't that just an amazing story? For our last story of the day, we will be touching on Leaker, who will get at least 11 years after guilty plea. Member of the U.S. Air National Guard posted secrets to social media. And this story does not have a picture attached to it, but was covered by the Associated Press. In Boston, Massachusetts, Air National Guard member Jack Texeria pleaded guilty Monday to leading highly classifying military documents about the war in Ukraine and other national security secrets under a deal with prosecutors that calls for him to serve at least 11 years in prison. Texeria of North Dighton, Massachusetts, pleaded guilty to 6 counts of willful retention and transmission of national defense information under the Espionage Act almost a year after he was arrested in the most consequential national security leak in years. The 22-year-old admitted illegally collecting some of the nation's most sensitive secrets and sharing them with his users on Discord, a social media platform with people playing online games. And that is just a little look into that story. He will be getting 11 to 17 years, prosecutors say, and they plan to seek high end of the range. And with that, that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Parole for March 6th with a touch of March 5th news in it. The Nonpareil can be heard each day at 5 p.m. I'm Serena Thede from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For EarthDate, I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.